Gospel reductionism replaces the Bible as the source and norm of theology with the gospel. What would a gospel reductionist edition of Luther's Small Catechism look like? Find out in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Russell Dawn details his journey from Anglicanism to Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
The King and Queen are coming to Downton.
What?
I want every surface to gleam and sparkle.
A royal luncheon, a parade, and a dinner. I'm going to have to sit down.
How's it all going?
Mary's got it under control.
Hardly. I need your help, Carson.
I'll be there in the morning, my lady. Don't you worry.
That's an excerpt from the trailer of the movie version of Downton Abbey. Obviously, a wildly successful, well, we used to call the miniseries, but let's just call it what it is. It's something that people binge watched. They lived with this family and their servants and their neighbors for hours at a time. What was the appeal of the TV series, and have they recaptured that lightning in a bottle in the movie version? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to review the movie Downton Abbey, Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. Taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
What made Downton Abbey, in terms of people watching it on the small screen, so very popular?
Do you remember in the 70s there was a TV show called, or it was from England, but it was called Upstairs, Downstairs?
I certainly do.
Yeah, so I think that's why. That was like wildly popular in the 70s. And it that's had some revivals along the way, but it entered into this idea of the manor house and the staff, the wait staff, and the aristocracy upstairs and their lives and the people in services, their lives. And that's what this is playing off of. The series Downton Abbey is kind of a retooling of that. And then this movie too is jumping off from that. So I think that's one of the reasons why. I don't know how popular it would have been had that not preceded it, in terms of just, you know, where everybody was in North America, in terms of like their memory of that show and the connections to it, the blueprint that was produced with it. The guy who made the kind of like the showrunner for Downton Abbey, this Julian Fellowes, he was a writer with Robert Altman on this Robert Altman movie called Gosford Park from 2001. And there he kind of like cut his teeth on this as a topic. And you can kind of see little hints and bits and pieces of that kind of thing from Gosford Park in the Downton Abbey's TV show, particularly the first season, and then in this movie as well.
Why do some of these series that are huge hits, especially in the age of binge watching, work well on the big screen and others don't?
I don't know. You get some that work good, like when they transition from one to the other, and some that don't work as well. There's lots of examples of that. Like one example, I think people are probably familiar with Star Trek moving from the TV screen to the big, you know, silver screen, as it were, like into the movie theaters. And that sometimes works really good and sometimes doesn't work really good. In fact, I was left thinking about one of the Star Trek movies connected to this one, because the challenge is with a TV series, you have more time, right? You just have more time to get your characters developed, to get to know everybody. You have a very limited amount of time in a movie. You just got like 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours tops these days. You know, that's the challenge, right? So when you get to take like something like Star Trek, for instance, you kind of need to make sure that all of the characters get a little something to do when you get into the movie. You know, you can't have people just be no dialogue, just off in the corner. It could be like that on a TV show where, well, next week they're going to get some lines and the storyline is going to be about them. But when you get to a movie, they have to kind of be involved. So this may tip off the hat to where I think this is going when it comes to this movie. But I was left to think of a movie more like Star Trek V. I can't remember the tagline for that one, but that's the one that William Shatner directed, and it was they meet God, and it's the worst Star Trek movie going. Or you could have something like The Wrath of Khan, the second one in the series, which was really great. So you can kind of translate this kind of stuff into a big movie, or you can kind of fail at it. And I think there are elements in which they just kind of don't quite hit it on the mark when it comes to this Downton Abbey.
I'm thinking about the Star Trek movies that went into The Next Generation, and all of them seemed to me, although there were some good storylines in there, all of them seemed to me to just be kind of slightly larger TV episodes, maybe even just like a two-part TV episode stuck together. There was nothing that, you know, the movie medium of it really brought to the watching experience.
Even with those, like Star Trek First Contact, that one was pretty good. But they're not all that great. Like, and you're right, like there is a bigger budget. You have more, maybe a little better cinematography. You have all that kind of stuff. But I think that where they start to, like, people are tuning in to listen to Downton Abbey conversation. We're talking about Star Trek. But I think the thing that people need to think about is that in both cases, you have like a large cast of characters. And in Downton Abbey, an even larger cast of characters, because you have this full upstairs group and then like corresponding group downstairs. And it's just hard to get them all into one movie. To get it all in there in a kind of equitable, fair way is just a real challenge. And sometimes it's just there's too much, and it's hard to balance it without a real clear, decisive plan, I guess, or single narrative to follow.
Well, you said that in the case of Downton Abbey, the movie, it wasn't so much a big, big episode as much as it was an entire season crammed into the space of a movie. What do you mean?
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, I sent you guys some notes, and I'm hoping to write something about this for everybody to read. But I just felt like you could have taken this entire movie and drawn it out over a 10-part, like 10 one-hour episodes, and you could have still told that story, except when you would do that kind of a thing, you would get more nuance, more development of characters. You'd have a little more time to let all of these threads, these plots play out. But when you condense all of it together into a two-hour movie, it feels like, and it's not just that it feels like it, it's like there are too many plots going on all at once. And if you walked into this movie and you, like, let's say you're spouse watched Downton Abbey and they're like, let's go see a movie, but you didn't watch any of it and you sat down, you wouldn't know what the heck was going on. You wouldn't know, like, because it also plays on the idea that you know these characters, you know the environs, you know what's going on, you know the relationships that are occurring. It plays on that idea and you would just be kind of lost. I sat down and started making a list of how many plots, and I alphabetized them, and I got to like L. So A through L, there's just so many different plots that are strung together in this film, and it seems like there's just a lot. So now if you really love Downton Abbey and you don't mind, you're getting like concentrated, full on, like, you know, you're having it mainlined into your veins, basically, you know, Downton Abbey. So some people are going to really love that and just really enjoy revisiting some of these characters.
So before we take our break, what's, if you can, from all those storylines woven together, what's the basic plot? What's going on in Downton Abbey, the movie?
The main plot, I guess, is a visit, and you heard it in the trailer, a visit from King George V and Queen Mary of Teck, his wife, doing a tour in that part of England, and they're going to be coming to Downton Abbey, staying overnight at the manor house. And I guess the kind of thing that fires up a lot of the drama, or I guess melodrama, the farce, the kind of side is going on also, is the fact that the king and queen come with their own staff, and that displaces the downstairs staff at Downton Abbey. You've got that, plus you've got a romance going on and some intrigue when it comes to a love child and an inheritance and all the stuff you'd probably expect from Downton Abbey.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie Downton Abbey. On the other side of the break, we will get into some of the things that he thought were implausible in the movie version. Stay tuned. Everybody in the neighborhood is dressing up to be there too. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? The new Portals of Prayer devotional Bible is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October. This devotional resource contains the entire English Standard Version of the Bible with 700 devotions from Portals of Prayer. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or learn more about Portals of Prayer devotional Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible.
Greetings in Christ, and thank you for listening to Issues Etc. If you ever find yourself visiting the Smoky Mountains in East Tennessee, please join us here at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Sevierville. We see it as a small part of our service to the church to provide sound liturgical worship opportunities for vacationing Lutherans to our area. For worship times and directions, please visit our website at splctn.com. That's splctn.com.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod community with mortgage and auto loans, checking and savings accounts, credit and debit cards. Lutheran FCU's Ministry of the Month for October is Lutheran Education Association. When you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, they'll give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Lutheran Education Association. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Good for you, good for the church. Lutheran Federal Credit Union, LutheranFCU.org.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. St. John Lutheran, San Benito, Texas. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Snohomish, Washington. Redeemer Lutheran, Gresham, Oregon. Bethlehem Lutheran, Fairborn, Ohio. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, St. Labore, Nebraska. Our Savior Lutheran, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois. And Trinity Lutheran, Savannah, Georgia. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. We are reviewing the movie Downton Abbey. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Ted, you want to talk about some of the things that are kind of unlikely or implausible in this film version of Downton Abbey. Because the characters are so well established and beloved by the audience and the binge watchers, you, as one of those, kind of found some of these things unlikely. What were they?
Yeah, I watched the whole show. So I watched all the episodes, all the seasons, all the Christmas specials. My wife, Michelle, and I watched them together. Did you guys watch it at all?
I have seen not a single episode.
Zero
episodes. Not even a trailer or a commercial.
Really? Wow. Okay. So anyways, so yeah, we watched all that stuff. And I guess this is where I just found this is something that bothered me way more than it bothered Michelle. And I think maybe I'm sensitive to this kind of thing, but one of the things that I really liked about the show was that they had kind of a sense of vocation. So the upstairs people, the aristocracy within the British, you know, system there in England, they had a role and a purpose. Now, people might go, oh, these guys are just rich and, you know, they're fox hunting and, you know, having lunch served to them, etc. But there's a sense in which that, and not just a sense, but an actual case where they kind of were like the hub for counties and districts and places where they really kind of help keep things going with helping farmers, helping towns, you know, patronages, all of these kinds of things. So they were involved in the lives of the people around them, and they had a role to play. And if they saw that this was a vocation and they rose to the occasion, then they were good at it, right? Or they you know, served a good purpose. The downstairs staff, those guys also served a purpose, and they were in service, they would call it. And their vocation was to look after the people upstairs. And sometimes these relationships went on for like the whole career of somebody. So they became very close, like family acquaintances, even in the midst of all of it. So you could almost think of like a family business with employees that have been there for decades. And they're in on things that are going on in the family, but there's this division of labor. So that I liked the fact that it was a real focus on vocation. And often, like, there were characters who really wanted to do good in their work. They wanted to be good at what they did. And they saw the traditions of the past as helping them, supporting them in getting their work done. And they would maybe be resistant to change if change meant that it would impinge on their ability to perform their vocation. So these were some really interesting themes that I think that ran through the whole series. The trouble in this one is that you get this, well, there's this kind of conceit at the bottom of, or the idea that the house staff wouldn't know that the king and queen had people that traveled with them to help with their service is bizarre to me. Like, if your whole life is to work in service, and especially for like the butler who's running the whole shebang and the head housekeeper and all these people, for them not to know that that's the case. The assumption was that when the king and queen showed up, that they were just going to do, they were going to serve the king and queen. They were going to do all of this work. But realistically, they would, because they're in that line of work themselves, they would know that the king and queen would show up with their own, that George V and Queen Mary of Teck, his wife, would come with their own people. So they're anticipating this. They want to do a good job in it. And then these guys show up and they're put out by that. And then you get this weird farce where they get involved in kind of underhanded things to make it so that they would then end up serving the king and queen, because they think that it would be an honor to do that. But in order to do that, they have to kind of like get the actual staff that should be doing it out of the way. And that's the part that I didn't like, because that does not seem to fit with those characters. Like, they would not see, like, Mr. Carson, who's the butler that they pull out of retirement for this weekend when the king and queen are arriving. He would not see it as an honorable thing to take away that guy's job in service to do it himself, or getting it in a dishonest way. If they were incapacitated in some way, like they were actually ill, or there was an accident, or there was something that would impede them from doing it that was an unfortunate thing but wasn't caused by them, then they would be more than happy to rise to the occasion to do the work and thereby fulfill their vocation. But just the way that it happens in the movie, they're locking people in rooms, they're drugging people, they're doing prank phone calls. It starts to become so farcical that I can't see how that's, and again, you're playing against the clock. You only have 2.5 hours, But it just seems like it's out of character for these characters to be doing these things.
Why do you think they did that? Do you think the producers thought there was some need of comic relief? Because certainly the Downton Abbey people, especially the actors, we're talking about world-class actors.
Oh, yeah, cast, skilled.
They care about their characters, too, and continuity and things like that.
Yeah, I have no idea. But if I had a chance to talk to him, this Julian Fellowes, that I would love to ask him that, because that to me is the most peculiar thing. In essence, they're potentially hurting the reputation of these other, like the was it the page or the backstairs or something, like it's a fancy name for the butler and his staff and people that come along with the king and queen. They're potentially hurting that guy's reputation and the reputation of those workers. They're certainly betraying him. They're telling lies about all of this to cover it all up. And I just can't see how that fits with that world, with those characters, with everything that they've built up for like 52 or some odd episodes that preceded it. So that's why I think it's a little more like Star Trek V, you know, the goofy one that William Shatner directed, and less like Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, because this isn't the best representation of these characters. At least not for the downstairs staff. The upstairs, you know, the aristocracy, the lords and, you know, viscounts and Lord Grantham and all the rest of them, they come off much more true to form as compared, like when you compare it to the TV series. You know, they're, you know, Maggie Smith is the dowager. She's, you know, voracious and, you know, witty, and they all come off really good in a way. The bridging character was always this Tom Branson, who was an Irish Republican who was a chauffeur and then married into the family against the wishes of the Lord Grantham or the Earl of Grantham. At any rate, like he was always the kind of like the bridge between upstairs and downstairs, played by this guy Alan Leach, and he's true to his character as it was developed along the way, and he even like foils a plot to assassinate the king. And he gets involved in this, you know, unexpected love, a story, romance with this this other person, and that's part of the inheritance storyline. But all of that kind of stuff, you know, fits better for the upstairs people than the stuff for the downstairs people. That I think is, and of course, there's always your obligatory. Nowadays, it seems like their obligatory thing with the LGBTQ storyline that they include in this. Now, one of the characters who worked in the house, Mr. Barlow, is gay, and that was through the TV series as well. There's a storyline of that in the film as well. So again, this gets to that. Every character has to have something to do, so they have to include all of these things in the story. But somehow what you get with the downstairs stuff just doesn't jive with what you would have seen along the way leading up to the movie.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest, reviewing the movie Downton Abbey. We'll talk about some general themes in these interwoven plots. And I've got a question about a TV show like this and a movie like this that is so popular in an era of the outing of white privilege. Stay tuned. Gospel reductionism replaces the Bible as the source and norm of theology with the gospel. What would a gospel reductionist edition of Luther's Small Catechism look like? Find out in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Russell Dawn details his journey from Anglicanism to Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM. or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
O Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing the movie Downton Abbey. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. Ted, is there any Christian content in the film?
Well, because of when it's set, 1927 in England, there should be more, let's say, obvious Christian content. And that should have been the case in the TV series as well. I think it's fairly well documented. People will have come across this, that so often they're sitting down to eat and they're about to be served, and you always start the meal already in progress so that you miss the table graces that they would have said, you know, so you kind of miss all of that. It's kind of a Christian, as it were. It's like there's a real absence of Christian content just in general. People don't quote scripture passages. Nobody seems to have memorized anything. Even the wait staff, like the people downstairs, they don't quote stuff. It's very thin on all of that. Maybe if there's a christening, maybe if there's a wedding and they have to have it at the church. Very little like to do with that. There's a couple of priest characters along the way. This movie, all you pretty much get is they're worried about an outdoor function when the king and queen come, and of course they want good weather. So Lady Mary asks her grandmother, played by Maggie Smith, to say a prayer for the weather, right? And she says, I'll put in a word. And then the next day, of course, the weather's better. So then Lady Mary says, the day has dawned and the weather proves conclusively that God is a monarchist. And that's pretty much it. So that's all you get. So again, this is kind of like the butt of a joke. So it's that I think I would have preferred it, you know, in terms of being more historical to the period, for sure, to have had more of an actual Christian ethos shown between the characters. And this film kind of, again, just goes the way that the TV series had gone. Although they didn't tend to make jokes that involved religious things in the TV series, here in the movie they did that one case that I brought up.
I've visited some of these historic places in Great Britain, these big manor houses and the various castles where either nobility or royalty would occasionally live and stay. They always had a chapel, a private family chapel.
Never shows up. Not once. They never show anything to do with the chapel at Downton Abbey. Downton Abbey doesn't have a chapel. Anyways, I digress.
I'm curious about the popularity of this series and then of the film too. In an age when white male privilege is roundly denounced from every corner practically, and here is a series and a film that couldn't be made without it, or whatever people think it is.
Well, there's a couple different ways that probably this film and the TV series would appease the hue and cry of people who are, you know, commenting on that constantly. First is that, you know, you do have the LGBTQ storyline that runs through it with the character of Mr. Barrow. But the other thing is that really when you scratch the surface, or like what quite a bit of the story of Downton Abbey is counterpoint to that idea of male privilege, in that the women are really the ones who solve the problems, fix the problems when there are problems, and are kind of running everything from behind the scenes anyways. And they will have their own confabs and meetings and stuff with each other to sort things out, and often are the ones that have the better ideas. Be that as it may, I mean, like that's just what you find. And that's not any different in this. In fact, this inheritance plot that they have in the film is all really, I mean, it impacts the male characters, but it has really at the heart of it is it's the women who all sort all of that out, like in the course of the film. So that's, and the TV series as well had, you know, the women characters were kind of trying to break the mold of what was kind of the cultural norm at the time. So they're pressing against kind of feminist ideas and things like that along the way, and against tradition, as it were.
So for the fan who really wanted Downton Abbey to stay on the air, so to speak, another season, will that person be satisfied with the film?
Well, maybe that's me. I mean, I would have been more satisfied with taking this story that I saw in the theater and just give me 10 episodes. Take 10 hours to tell it instead of two. I would have been more satisfied with that myself. But lots of people will see it and go, well, those are the characters I like. And for quite a few of those characters, they're acting the way the characters were that I liked in the first place. And you know, maybe their seventh and eighth commandment bell isn't ringing in their head when they're watching all of the shenanigans attached to the farce of the Downton Abbey downstairs staff. But I think there you have it.
You said that you and your wife had somewhat different reactions to that incongruity that you felt watching the film. What was her reaction?
She enjoyed it. And again, it's sometimes she says, you think about this stuff too much. And I, you know, that's what I do. I watch the movies and I think about them, and she's not wrong, but then again, you know, you do need to think about these things. It's good to take a minute and think about what you were watching.
Do you think it's with about a minute here, do you think it really is kind of a moral issue that even with characters that are fictional, we expect them to be true to their character, especially if that character is noble and good? About a minute.
Isn't it interesting that this is the case? I think that when a character is, maybe another one of these examples would be Luke Skywalker from the Star Wars movies. And even Mark Hamill, the person who played Luke Skywalker, when he saw what they did with his character in The Last Jedi, he was upset with it. Of course, he poured a lot of his life into it. So I think that this is interesting that we care about it in people in our lives, and that spills over to caring about it with fictional characters even that don't have the flesh and blood and life that our loved ones and family members and people in our actual lives have, right? So it is fascinating. It's well worth pondering.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. And you can read his reviews at issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Ted, thank you.
Thank you.
For more than 80 years, Christians have been using portals of prayer for their daily devotions. Concordia Publishing House has joined Portals of Prayer with the English Standard Version of the Bible to create Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible. It is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October. You can find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and ask for Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible, 1-800-325-3040. In the next hour of Issues Etc., we're going to look forward to Sunday morning, according to the 3-year lectionary, talking with Dr. Carl Fikencher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, about the apostles' request to Jesus, Lord, increase our faith. Jesus' response is curious. He says, if you had faith like a mustard seed, you could say to the mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea. What in the world does that mean? We'll find out next with Dr. Carl Fikencher. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay with us.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to eighth grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
College Preparation Station is proud to announce the opening of its first Missouri location, Creve Coeur. College Preparation Station provides ACT, SAT, PSAT instruction, and college scholarship guidance. Their new Creve Coeur branch is located at 11,500 Olive Boulevard. Learn more at cpsprep.com or call 314-750-5967. College Preparation Station in Creve Coeur, Missouri, and Maryville, Illinois. cpsprep.com.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.